Luke chapter 22 is where we will start our lesson this morning. Josh, I appreciate you leading all those songs. He asked me what I would be speaking about this morning, and I told him, which I'll reveal in just a second. But all of the songs definitely contribute to the idea that we are going to discuss this morning. And it is good to be amongst brethren and friends of Jesus, as we have just sung in this song. But I'd like to talk with just a little bit of an illustration before we get into the lesson to serve as an introduction. And in high school, I had a friend that was going to join the football team his last our senior year. And he had never played football before in his life. I don't think he had ever done anything of any type of athletic endeavor ever in his life. But we were excited to have him because he's one of our friends, and so it was a good deal. So we got through the first week of practice, and he destroyed his knee, and he couldn't play anymore. And that happens. Doesn't mean that you're not part of the team. Doesn't mean that we all of a sudden hate you. But your role has just changed. Well, unfortunately, this guy thought that he was done and stopped showing up to practice, but he would still show up every Friday morning to wear his jersey around school. And we would never see him until pep rally, and he would just kind of sneak in the back with his jersey. I was like, oh, hey, his name is Chris. Hey, Chris, haven't seen you in a week. And this happened the whole season. And so the question was, well, is he really a part of the team? Because we just barely see him. He's kind of following us, but not very closely. And he just kind of shows up at the best times that really is just an appearance. And it's that same type of question and that same, I think, human tendency that exists whenever we become Christians, is that we want to be part of the team, and we've taken the steps to become a part of the team, to be part of the number. And then sometimes, perhaps something happens to us, or we realize that this might be more than we had imagined. It requires more of us than we thought it would. And so we know how great it is, and we never really lose that love, but we never really follow close enough as required to actually be a part of the team. And just to extend the analogy just a little bit further, and sometimes our roles change and our capabilities change, but all we have is all we have. And Peter, in Luke chapter 22, verse 54, we see a change in Peter and a little bit of a departure from his character that illustrates the title of our lesson this morning. Luke chapter 22, verse 54. And this is, of course, when Jesus is being taken away. This is in the hour of his trial, right before his crucifixion. In verse 54, having arrested him, they led him and brought him into the high priest's house, but Peter followed at a distance. And it's such a heartbreaking sentence, or a phrase in that verse. And we know why it's heartbreaking, because Peter has been a fierce defender of Jesus, has been a warrior for Christ. And it's not like he forgot who Christ was. And he loves him enough to follow him, but not enough to follow closely in this moment. And before I beat Peter up too much, I wanted to look at these few reminders. When one becomes a Christian, we're told in the scriptures that we are to walk in a newness of life, that things will change, that things are going to be required of us, and that's Romans chapter 6, verse 4. And then as a result of being this new creation in 2 Corinthians chapter 5, verse 17, says that if anyone is in Christ, he is a new creation, and old things have passed away. Behold, all things have become new. And then when Jesus was choosing his disciples, he actually talked to Peter and says, follow me, and I will make you fishers of men in Matthew chapter 4, verse 19. And during his ministry, multitudes follow Jesus, and they follow closely. Matthew chapter 19, verse 2, and Mark chapter 3, verse 7, and Luke chapter 9, verse 11. We're not going to read those, but just to substantiate the idea. Throughout the Bible, the act and the relationship that you see with Christ and his disciples and the apostles and everyone is that they are following him. That word follow is used over and over, and it describes our service. Christ is the example. Christ is the mark with which we fix ourselves to align our journey. We follow him. That's what we are to do. But as we can see through that one verse with Peter, there are perhaps degrees of following. And if there are degrees, is it truly following? That's what we'll discuss this morning. But I want us to look at Peter. I want us to see the journey of Peter, and I really want us to re-examine Peter's person that makes that verse in 54, in my emotional opinion, heartbreaking, that gives it that type of weight. If you would turn to Matthew chapter 16, we'll start in verse 13. Matthew chapter 16, starting in verse 13. When Jesus came into the region of Caesarea Philippi, he asked his disciples, saying, "Who do men say that I, the Son of Man, am?" Verse 14. So they said, "Some say John the Baptist, some Elijah, and others Jeremiah, or one of the prophets." And he said to them, "But who do you say that I am?" Simon Peter answered and said, "You are the Christ, the Son of the living God." And it's such a wonderful contrast between all of those people that are kind of following Jesus or hearing of Jesus or are trying to demean Jesus. But when Christ confronts them and says, "Well, who do you, the person that I am with right now, who do you say that I am?" Peter, without hesitation, says, "You are Christ, the Son of God." When you look at the atmosphere, that's a strong moment of faith. It is upon that faith that Christ is going to build his church. And who was the one that answered? Peter. Peter is a heroic figure of faith in this moment. It seems a little bit small, but it's a large, large moment of faith. In Matthew chapter 26, go ahead and turn there as well. Matthew chapter 26, verses 33 through 35. Peter answered and said to him, "Even if all are made to stumble because of you, I will never be made to stumble." And Jesus said to him, "Assuredly, I say to you, this night before the rooster crows, you will deny me three times." And we'll stop right there for just a moment. We often talk about whenever we're about to enter into a situation that we know might try our faith or that we know might be a challenge for us. What is the best way to enter into that challenge? To make the decision beforehand, right? You purpose in your heart. That's a phrase that we say often. We purpose in our heart that we are not going to waver, that we are going to choose Christ. And we do that often. So if any unforeseen circumstance that might challenge our faith come across our face, that we can then be steadfast. That's exactly what Peter does right here. Peter answered and said, "Even if all are made to stumble because of you, I will never be made to stumble." And we'll talk about verse 31 in just a moment. But Peter has made this decision. And we see this kind of character with Peter often. He's very passionate and a bit reactionary. Well, maybe not a bit, quite reactionary. But I think it stems from a very sure foundation. Of course it does. And we see that foundation there. But then Jesus answers and says, "You will deny me." In verse 35, "But Peter said to him, 'Even if I have to die with you, I will not deny you.' And so said all the disciples." And so Jesus himself says, "You will deny me." And Peter's faith and zeal in that moment says, it's not possible. And he says that to Jesus. And when we look at Peter as a man in this moment, I think we kind of start seeing some of ourselves in him. You know, we think back to the time that you were baptized as a Christian. It's a beautiful moment. And it's the biggest decision you will ever make in your life. And imagine just the surety and the assurance that is surrounding that moment. And we build upon that moment as Christians, right? And we continually get stronger and our faith grows stronger. And Peter, much in the same fashion, has done that. He's been following Jesus. He's listened to his words. And his faith is growing stronger and his love for Jesus is growing stronger, so much so that when Jesus says, you're going to deny me, he says, it's not possible. If you will look at Luke chapter 22, go ahead and turn to Luke chapter 22, verse 33. But he said to him, Lord, I am ready to go with you, both to prison and to death. And then again in verse 34, I tell you, you shall not crow this day because you will deny me. And in John 13, verse 37. Peter said to him, Lord, why can I not follow you now? I will lay down my life for your sake. And we see these three different accounts of Peter's same heart. Saying, I would die for you. I would go to prison and die for you. And the other account, I would lay down my life for you. There is no way that I will not follow you. And that's the consistent theme that we see in those accounts of Peter responding to Jesus. And I want us to realize the seriousness of Peter's confession. It's not lip service. And I know that in times past when I have read this, because I knew the story and because I knew the outcome, I dismissed Peter's zeal in that moment. Maybe you've done the same, to where it seemed like just lip service. Maybe he was saying this and not because he didn't love Christ, but because when faced with that challenge, when faced with the idea of doing that, he was like, oh, never. I would never do that. But it's not empty words. He is confessing Christ to him, and it's a serious idea. If you look in Luke chapter 6, verse 46. Luke chapter 6, verse 46, Christ says, but why do you call me Lord, Lord, and not do the things which I say? In Ecclesiastes chapter 5, verse 2 through 5, says similar ideas, that a confession is serious. That it's not just lip service, but whenever you say something, one, the actions have to follow up. And we'll talk about that in just a second. But it reveals the heart. You have written a check that you have to cash. And Peter wrote that check in front of Christ in those moments. And I guarantee you, even though Peter is reactionary, they're not empty words. In that moment when faced with the idea of him not following Christ, Peter said, never. I'm going to follow Christ. And every one of us in this room that have named the name of Christ have made that same concession, have made that same confession when we entered into his baptism. But as you know, Peter does fall. And Christ predicts this fall. And we've read that several times. We've seen that he says, you are going to deny me. And we know because of Christ's omnipotence and omnipresence and omniscience, there it is, that that is the case, that he knows ahead of time. And there's something interesting to consider about Peter that is revealed. Look at Luke chapter 22, verse 31. Luke chapter 22, verse 31. And the Lord said, Simon, Simon, indeed Satan has asked for you that he may sift you as wheat. What was at the heels of Peter in this moment? What was something that might have been a factor in Peter's denial? That Satan wanted him. And we know this, and it's a reality that we have to acknowledge. And that if we don't acknowledge, can get the best of us. Christ says, Simon, Satan is after you. He has asked for you. And why do you think Satan has asked for Peter? Because he's damaging Satan. The strength of Peter going out there and saying, I will never deny you, and all the other times in the Bible where Peter has been a strong force for Christ, who does Satan want to destroy? That guy. Because he's destroying me. He's our adversary. That's what adversaries do. And so Satan is asking for him, and it's the same for you and I. Look at 1 Peter chapter 5, verse 8. 1 Peter chapter 5, verse 8, be sober, be vigilant, because your adversary, the devil, walks about like a roaring lion, seeking whom he may devour. And we just talked about 1 Peter quite often this last week. But the same idea is there and present and real. And Christ in Luke chapter 22, verse 32, prays for Peter. He knows that Satan is after him. He knows that he is his adversary. And right after he tells him this in verse 32, he says, but I have prayed for you that your faith should not fail. And when you have returned to me, strengthen your brethren. And that verse kind of chokes me up as well. I won't do it this time. But Christ is praying for you just as he prayed for Peter. It's a powerful idea. That Christ is our friend, that Christ is in our corner, and each and every one of us is looking at our situation and saying, I've got your back. I'm praying for you. I'm on your side. And I'm praying that your faith will not fail. But he already knows Peter's is going to. And that's love. That's courage. And he says, and when you've returned to me, strengthen your brethren. And can you imagine being Peter in that moment? What do you mean, when I've returned to you? I didn't know I left. Sometimes it's that way in our lives. Maybe we haven't known that we have drifted, or that we have left the friendship of Christ, where we're not following him. But that's who Christ is. He knows that we will fall, and he prays for our strength. And then, we'll talk about this in just a little bit, but he expects us to return and to then strengthen our brethren to get back to work and to renew our faith. Peter wants to follow. We've established that. But he would fall. Like all of us. So what was Peter's problem? Why was it that Peter fell? How is it that there was some sort of degree of faith here to where he's following at a distance? Because he was caught in that tug of war between Christ and Satan. Matthew chapter 12, verse 30. He who is not with me is against me, and he who does not gather with me scatters abroad. And then in Matthew chapter 6, verse 24. No one can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or else he will be loyal to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and mammon. And this is a principle that you and I are clearly aware of. But I think if we apply these ideas to Peter's situation, it's not as if he wanted to follow Satan. And it's really not that he was enticed by the lusts of any flesh that are in the world. What was the tug of war then? What was it that caused Peter to follow at a distance? His self-preservation. His idea of himself. He wanted to make sure that he was safe. He wanted to make sure that on his own account, he was able to continue in his life the way that he saw fit. But as we see in those verses, if we try to follow Christ with that mindset, we're really not following. So the question is there a degree of following Christ? I think we could say that there possibly are. You may take a step or two, but you're still really close. You may have just made a momentary mistake, and then you quickly get back into following Christ. You've never really left the heat, right? Yeah, you're still right there next to Christ. You may have gotten distracted for a moment where you're not looking at Him, but you've never left the fold. Your sin has never taken you away. Or if it was sinful, then you got quickly back because you realize, you know, it's not about me. But sometimes we make all of these decisions and these choices that are not looking towards Christ, not following Christ, but we're rather know that we should follow Christ. It's a foundation that we probably will never leave us, right? And I always get this image in my head, and I've been talking with a couple of my friends about this. As a Christian, and through being a Christian for several years, I think it is impossible for me to ever lose sight of who Christ is. It's not impossible for me to lose my salvation. Please don't misconstrue that. But Christ's light is so strong and is brighter than the darkness. If I ever lost my salvation, it's not because I can't see it. It's not because I can't see Christ's example, right? You stood in a dark room, and the lamp's there, and when you're looking at the lamp, it's really bright. But when you turn your back, there's more darkness, but you can still see it. You know it's there, right? But you've chosen to go away from it and walk in the opposite direction. When we do that, we're not looking at the light. We're no longer a part of the light. There's no such thing as halfway following Jesus. Whenever Peter is following Christ at a distance and he makes that decision to be partially there, he's not at all. Are we in danger of that? We think we are. We have assuaged our own conscience and saying, you know, I know to reject Christ, to not show up at worship service, to not do my part among the congregation, I know that I would never do that. But sometimes we come and we don't fully engage ourselves. Or sometimes we come and we think about putting our own needs above our brethren's, or even Christ's, which is basically the same. And so we're following Christ, but in reality, it's at a distance. And we're no different than Peter. And Satan has us. And that's a dangerous place to be, where we think we're safe, but we're really not. And that's why it's so heartbreaking to see Peter, this stalwart of faith that we have seen from him over and over, to be so wishy-washy and weak and incomplete that he's really not there at all. And imagine Christ's perspective. You know, your best friend, this one that has done so much for you. I mean, it's not like Peter was just lip service. Like I said, he had done a lot of work up to this point for the name of Christ. He was there. He was a comfort for him. But he betrayed him. He denied him in this moment. Luke chapter 10, verse 27 through 28. So he answered and said, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your strength, and with all your mind, and your neighbor as yourself." And he said to him, "You have answered rightly. Do this and you will live." That's what's required of us. It's not real love unless it's all the way, right? And love is the most beautiful and the most scary thing in the world. Think about the very first time you went on your first date. Scared, right? Why? Why is it so scary? You're just going to go talk to a person. You've talked to people your entire life. Why is this different? Because the possibility of you having to love someone, as humans, we know that it will take everything we have. It will take all of us. And that's a scary proposition. It really is. So you look at this moment and you're like, oh, I might have to give everything I have. And we're not used to doing that, perhaps. But that moment that you did fall in love changed, right? What happened to that fear? It's not even there anymore. Because something so beautiful and something more powerful than fear is present. And you love giving everything you have. You enjoy it. It keeps you moving. And that's what we are to have. That, if it's not that, then it's not real. It's not present. And it's something that Peter lost whenever he followed at a distance. So I'd submit to you that following Christ at a distance is not following at all. Excuse me, at all. It's not real love. It has a semblance of love, but love is so beautiful and powerful and strong that anything less is not worthy of it. It is the fixed mark with which we have to submit ourselves to and fit ourselves to. And when we do, it transforms us and makes us better than we thought we could be. But Peter forgot that. And what was the result of him following at a distance? How far had he actually gone? It's not measurable, is it? You know, I said there were degrees. But there might be some degrees, but I think there is a point to where there is no degree. It either is or it isn't. It's a matter of the heart. And it's something that only God knows, and perhaps you know. Matthew chapter 18, verses 8 through 9. Matthew chapter 18, verses 8 through 9. If your hand or foot causes you to sin, cut it off and cast it from you. It is better for you to enter into life maimed or maimed rather than having two hands or two feet be cast into the everlasting fire. And if your eye causes you to sin, pluck it out and cast it from you. It is better for you to enter into life with one eye rather than having two eyes to be cast into hell fire. It's an attitude. Going back to my friend Chris. He was damaged, right? There was something about his life that disabled him from following in a certain way. His knee was destroyed, and he couldn't walk for several weeks. But he still could have served. He still could have been there doing his part. And if he was, his heart hadn't have changed from the moment he decided to join the team to the moment that he was injured. Nothing had actually changed about Chris if he would have maintained his service, right? Nothing would have changed. Maybe how his service looked would have changed, or what he was able to do would have changed, but his heart hadn't. His heart wouldn't have changed. But Chris's heart did change. Because he didn't have this mindset. This love is so pure, love is so beautiful and powerful, and particularly God's love, which all love stems from, that it's worth me getting rid of anything. It's worth me going through the fire. It's worth me, you know, going through things maim or lame rather than not being there at all. It's this all or nothing mentality that we have to have. But this all or nothing doesn't necessarily mean, like I said, that we have to do more than we are capable of. In fact, Christ says that. But he requires all that we have. Every bit of it. And so the result of Peter's decision is that he drifted. His attitude had changed. And he lost his zeal for confession. Like we established earlier, who was the first one to say, "You are Christ, the Son of God"? Peter. And whenever he started thinking about his own wealth, his own health, his own self-preservation, his own circumstance, he lost himself too. It's a weird moment. It's not like Peter. It's such a contrast from everything that we've read. But the result of Peter's decision to think about himself first, to think about his situation first, he ended up the adverse effect in losing himself. Not feeling like himself. Not resulting in the same loyalty that he had previously expressed. Where was it now? Another big reason and another result of Peter's decision and denying Christ was that he was in the wrong crowd. He took himself out of the fold of Christ and found himself amongst those that were against Christ. Look at Mark chapter 14. Mark chapter 14, verse 54. But Peter followed him at a distance, right into the courtyard of the high priest, and he sat with the servants and warmed himself at the fire. I hate that verse. And I don't mean to be disrespectful when I say I hate seeing Peter do that. He withdraws himself from Christ and then associates with those that are adversaries against him. And it's, again, such a heartbreaking moment. He warms himself by the fire, trying to draw comfort, trying to make himself feel better and fit in with those against Christ. Have we ever done that before? Have you ever found yourself in a situation where there is someone that you know is going against Christ, perhaps in their speech of another person? They're talking bad about someone. They're complaining. And you find yourself joining in? I have. Someone that is talking bad about one of your brethren. Someone that is complaining about one of your brethren. You chime in. Yeah, that guy. Yeah, she did. I know. It's been that way. You're warming yourself by the fire of an adversary of Christ. And it can happen to any one of us. It happened to Peter. And it happened to him where he was faced with the decision before and in the middle of it. He knew it was coming. And he still made the decision to deny Christ. He found himself with the wrong crowd. You know, that's one of the awareness that we have to have. That's the awareness that we have to have as Christians. If we can't look around and see our circumstance and our situation, if we can't determine the enemies of Christ from the friends of Christ, we're in trouble. But I guarantee you, all of us in here can. Right? I know what it's like to be with friends of Christ, thanks to you. And so I have that idea. And I read in God's Word about friends of Christ. And I know who Christ is. And I can see Christ in my brethren. Isn't that a crazy idea that we find in 1 John? That God's love is perfected in you and I. And it's something that we can actually experience and see. And it's a beautiful thing. But the sobering idea is that you and I know what that looks like. And so you and I know what that doesn't look like either. So there's really no excuse. Peter was with the wrong crowd. He was then with the enemy. And who we associate with has that effect on us. And we need to be wary of it. John chapter 18, verse 17. Then the servant girl who kept the door said to Peter, "You are not also one of the man's disciples, are you?" He said, "I am not." And we know that he goes on to deny him three times. When we withdraw from Christ and we find ourselves amongst the adversaries of Christ, we start to become a shell of who we were. And we become cold and indifferent. He's again faced with this possibility. He's following at a distance, and he's seeing Christ suffer, and he's not doing anything about it. But then he's asked, "Hey, isn't that you? Aren't you?" Oh, no. His heart is becoming more and more calloused. He's becoming cold and indifferent towards his best friend, and love is not something that is emanating from within him anymore. In fact, in verse 25, this cold and indifference allows him to swear and to curse. In verse 25, "Now Simon Peter stood and warmed himself. Therefore they stood and said, 'You are not also one of his disciples, are you?' He denied it and said, 'I am not.' One of the servants of the high priest, a relative of him, whose ear Peter cut off, said, 'Did I not see you in the garden with him?' Peter then denied again." Same Peter that defended Christ with a sword, a physical sword. "Hey, that's you. That was my cousin." "No, I'm telling you, it's not." That's what happens to us. We become people that no one wants to be around. We become people that no one respects. People that aren't even Christians. that our adversaries of Christ don't even respect us because we're no longer who we have said that we were. And I'm telling you right now, that is the fastest way to cause people to lose their souls or to never see Christ. Because if you and I as Christians become cold and indifferent towards Christ, people know that. We're all connected. We're all made of the same stuff. And I'm talking about everyone in the world. And we know when someone's being fake or insincere or is putting on a front. And Peter was doing this. And he lost opportunities for Christ. Let that never be said of us. He could have had an opportunity 3 times to say, "Hey, isn't that you?" He could have said, "Yeah, it is. And I love him. And he's about to die for you." And could he have suffered for that? Sure. But his suffering wouldn't have matched the love that would have been within him. That's how it works. Now that we are all fully depressed, there's a happy ending to this, though. Turn to Luke chapter 22. Verse 32. And we've already read it. But Christ says, "I have prayed for you that your faith should not fail, and when you have returned to me, strengthen your brethren." Christ knows he's going to return, and he does. Luke chapter 22, verses 61 through 62. "And the Lord turned and looked at Peter. Then Peter remembered the word of the Lord, and he said to him, 'Before the rooster crows, you will deny me 3 times. So Peter went out and wept bitterly." I can't imagine Peter, what he was going through. After he had denied him, Christ turns to him and basically says, "I told you." And he goes out and he weeps. And I'm thankful for Peter in that moment. You see him weeping because it meant something to him. His heart was cold and indifferent, and so much so that he was lying and swearing and cursing and saying, "Leave me alone, that's not me." But whenever he looks at Christ, he allows himself to be changed by him again. And he's sorry. And he goes out and weeps. Because that's one of those side effects of love. Whenever we know we're not living up to it, it means something to us. And it softens our heart. And that's what we see in an extreme form with Peter. And I'm thankful for his soft heart. You know, we contrast this with Judas in Matthew chapter 27. Whenever Judas is convicted, what is his response? He ends it. He doesn't turn. He doesn't change. And something really cool about this moment, in John chapter 20. John chapter 20, verse 4. "So they both ran together, and the other disciple outran Peter and came to the tomb first." They're running to see Christ. And Peter is right there sprinting. He doesn't care anymore about what is around him, about his own circumstance. He is running to see Christ. And it's the same attitude and this same redemptive quality of Peter that allows him to take the gospel to others first in Acts chapter 2. How powerful is that? That's how God works. That's how love works. He uses that. He uses those moments to make us better if we turn back to him. If we enter back into his fold and follow Christ, God uses that for his will, and it makes us stronger, and then we are living in love, and there's no better existence than that. What a wonderful story. What an encouraging story. One that we can follow as an example. Peter, being a man, in the most extreme and the most crucial hour, denied Christ, followed him at a distance, warmed himself by the fire of the adversaries of Christ, but yet was turned back and followed Christ with extreme fervor, the extreme fervor that he once had, but I think it had been deepened at this point. And brethren, you and I are like Peter. We've accepted Christ. We have had fervor. But perhaps there are moments where we have followed at a distance. We never stopped looking at Christ. We never stopped coming to church. But perhaps we've drifted away. Brother, I'm telling you this. If we're not sprinting to see him every day, we're not doing it right. And it's going to take all of us sprinting together to do it right. Just like we saw in John. And the cool thing is that we can. And there's nothing that can stop us from that. Because Christ is praying for us. He's in our corner. And it's such an empowering idea. We can't allow ourselves to lose sight. And if we ever do, we can't allow ourselves to remain far from him. Let us always remember that the safest and the most loving place is to be close to God. And that's where we need to find ourselves. And I'm thankful for all of us that help each other remain in that closeness of God. And so I encourage us to keep doing it. And maybe run a little faster. If you need to run to Christ for whatever reason, you've never named him, or you found yourself drifting, now's an opportunity to do so. Let us know if we can help as we stand and as we sing.